Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Last time we recorded, we hadn't yet done SMTJ Live, and when the podcast released, it was during SMTJ Live.
Yeah.
We've now done SMTJ Live.
We have.
In the continuity of real life.
Yes.
How did you guys think it went?
I had a great time.
I think it went really
well. Did you?
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did.
Are you sure?
Up until, well, yeah, actually, I did have a good time even in the Gunj.
Really?
Yeah. It was more like having to deal with the aftermath of the Gunj that was, I think,
the Gunj was kind of fun.
Like. The Gunj was fun.
To play with.
And it was really warm as well.
Yeah,
so it was kind of nice.
It's like a slimy hug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You nearly died getting out of it.
I did. Yeah. I almost slipped and smashed my head on the table, but that was okay. These things happen.
Wouldn't be the first time you smashed your head on that table, to be honest.
Would it?
So. No.
I've got a rock solid head, so I would have been fine. Yeah. I would have actually gone through the table.
That's why we wanted to protect it.
Yeah,
not you.
Exactly.
SMTJ Live was fantastic. And the reception from you guys has been really encouraging as well. Mm. We're glad those of you who joined us live enjoyed it. It's up now on the VODs channel. Just to reiterate a few of the things that we scrambled to try and announce in the moment when we recorded last week's podcast, because we didn't plan ahead. There is a Triple Jump video game coming.
Yeah.
It's actively in production at the moment, an FMV game that we're hoping to bring to Steam. Mm-hmm. There is new stuff on the Patreon right now. Main Menu and Rules Boss now exclusive to the Patreon at the $5 tier. So if you support us with $5 a month, you get access to monthly Rules Boss or Main Menu. But to kick things off, there's an episode of both there currently.
And thank you to everyone who's signed up since Saturday.
You.
It's been the response has been great. Mm. Thank you so much.
Had a lot of new sign-ups.
Yeah. We were worried that you guys would be angry at us. Everyone's
some people were angry at us, but that's understandable.
But everyone seems to have been really nice and really supportive, so thank you so much.
We hope our justification makes sense in that these shows were just going to be taken off YouTube entirely. So this is the only way they can continue, and if you want to keep seeing them, make sure you support us on Patreon. It's a really promising start, and if we can maintain that momentum, then hopefully we can keep putting those on there. But not only that, at the $5 tier, there's also early access to Worst and Weirdest Games Ever, submitting questions on this podcast, loads of stuff. So maybe go check out patreon.com/teamtriplejump. There's also, you've got one day left, haven't you, Peter?
That's right. It's never been a more exciting time to buy that t-shirt. Mm. So if you head to the
what
store...
What t-shirt?
For those who aren't looking, it's never been a more exciting time to be a gamer t-shirt.
It's like from SMTJ Live.
Yes.
If you watched it, that's what that's from. So it's like a commemorative t-shirt.
It's a special exclusive pre-order only thing. So once we've sort of, once the time has run out on that, we will send out everyone's shirts who's ordered it, and then it will be gone forever. But also on the store, there's 50% off all of our legacy logo merch. And you should still definitely consider having a look at that, because although we do have a new logo, it's basically the same size and shape and text and everything. It's just the new one glows and the old one didn't. So it's not like you're wearing a really out-of-date logo.
No.
You should go and it's a really good deal.
It's going to get colder soon too.
Yeah.
True.
A couple of warm boys on there, the hoodie and the hat as well. So maybe go check that out. That closes at 23:59 p.m. UK time on Sunday. So if you're listening to this at the time of release, you've got about a day and a half if you're interested in going and nabbing one of those. It's Starfield time, everyone.
It is.
Yes.
Starfield is here. Everyone's talking about Starfield. The reviews have been really good, but they've sort of been kind of all over the place, haven't they? With a lot of people saying that it takes time to get started. But it is really a very exciting time to be a gamer, because conversation is just dominated on social media by the crazy things people are finding in Starfield, how far through it are you, and so on and so forth. It's it is actually going down very well, it seems. And
we'll
that's
have
fun.
We'll have a review corner on it today.
Yeah.
You can hear all about James Jenkins' thoughts.
But before we get there, it's time to talk about this week's sponsor.
It is. It's also Weirdest Games Ever week, but you know, you knew that. You've been, you know what's going
on.
I don't know if you guys know this, but Smash Mouth. Sorry, I'm actually really emotional. Smash Mouth, you guys know them?
I do.
Yeah.
You might know that their lead singer, Steve, he died this week.
He did.
Rest
big
in
sad.
Yeah.
It was a bit problematic at the end of his life, but still,
he was a little bit,
he was still didn't deserve to die that young. So we're a bit sad. There's some great songs from Smash Mouth. Iconic. So in honor to kind of memorialize them, Bethesda obviously releasing their game this week.
Yeah.
They were like, well, let's do like a special 24-hour thing. We'll change the name of it. And just to like, to bring him into everyone's mind.
Sure. Okay.
So they're changing the name briefly, just for 24 hours, to All Starfield.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Hey now.
You're an All-Star Field. Yeah. Right. And what does that... They're just changing the name.
They're just changing the name.
Okay.
And all of their like social media stuff will just say All-Star Field for 24 hours. And then the poor marketing intern is going to have to change it all back to Starfield tomorrow.
Right. And then people will like laugh, react on Facebook when they change it back to the old logo. Because they're like, huh. Some sort of political message or something.
Yeah.
They
love
long.
That stuff.
Yeah. Where's straight day? Where's straight field? That's what they're saying.
What's international men's field day?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But don't worry about that, because we're not going to have any of that, because it's not real.
Oh, no.
I mean, he did
He's
die.
He's still alive.
But, he did die, but they're not changing the name of Starfield for 24 hours.
Oh, rest in peace, Steve. Steve, yeah?
Yeah, Steve Harwell is his name.
Harwell from Smash Mouth.
I'm impressed with all of these very real sponsors that we've done over the past few weeks. Several of which have been Starfield themed.
Mm-hmm.
None of us have gone for Garfield at any
point.
Oh,
see, that's great.
It's a perfect rhyme.
Have you seen the meme image where someone has Photoshopped that? It says Garfield, and it's just a moon, but with Garfield.
No,
face.
I've not, but
it's
I can imagine
it's very
that
good.
It exists.
I'm a big fan of that. No, we're not sponsored by All Starfield. We are, of course, sponsored by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where if you support us today, you can submit questions to this podcast and get loads of other rewards, as we have already discussed. Make sure you go to triplejump.com to find links to everything, that being the YouTube, Twitch, Discord, Cameo, etc. The shop is triplejumpshop.com if you want to get one of these shirts or take advantage of the sale. And there are a couple of other things out on the channel this week, one of which, as you mentioned, Ashton, is Weirdest Games Ever.
Yes, it is Shamu's Deep Sea Adventure. It's weird. It's really weird. And it's not the narrative you would expect.
No.
Really?
No.
But it was a good one. That's coming out tomorrow for those listening at the time of release. So go check that out.
If you're a patron,
you've already seen it.
Yeah, absolutely. Additionally, we are excited to announce that the sleepover streams will soon be returning.
Yes.
If those of you who've been with us for a while will know that once a month we used to do a later evening stream and we would play something. And would we swear on the sleepover streams? I think we did. We'd swear on those and we'd have a merry time and sometimes read you bedtime stories and so on. And we sort of phased those out. We're going to look to return those to you once a month, and the first one will hopefully be the end of this month. So stay tuned to our social channels and we'll hopefully see you there for some sweary fun later in the evening.
We will.
It's time to get started, Peter Austin.
It is. This is a question that's been sent to us by Cormoran Strike. Whoa, cool name. Who says, how do you guys feel about the PlayStation Portal and the fact it's Wi-Fi streaming only instead of being more a Wii U tablet device that can play games locally without Wi-Fi? Thank you, Cormoran.
Thank you, Cormoran.
I've got a little bit of a write-up here from Nerdist, who say, Basically, the PlayStation Portable is a portable device you can use to play all your PS5 favorite games. Sony suggests you can use it in cases where your TV screen is otherwise occupied, or if you just want to visit a different room than your console. If you want to play a PS5 game in your bed, it sounds convenient. The PlayStation Portal remote device will let you play your PS5 games using Wi-Fi, but you do need to connect to your actual PS5 to do so. It will essentially mirror your PS5. But without Wi-Fi, you won't be able to use this device. Much to the disappointment of fans, the PlayStation Portal itself does not have 5G capabilities. It will also not stream games from PlayStation Plus Premium's cloud. Sony notes, games that require a VR headset or additional peripherals are not compatible. Games that must be streamed on PS5 using a PS Plus Premium membership are also not compatible. So there you go. I mean, to me, I think in the modern world we live in, this is probably less of an issue than perhaps some people are making it out to be. I understand that, you know, there will be situations where you don't have access to Wi-Fi, or this is going to cause some kind of problem and mean that, oh, I'm not going to be able to play that now because of XYZ. But I think generally speaking, the place where your PS5 is currently sitting is probably a building that has some sort of Wi-Fi network in it, right? I think, you know, it's still not good news. Like, it would be better if it did have 5G or, you know, capabilities like that. But I don't know. I think in the modern day and age, you're probably going to have Wi-Fi connected to your PS5 and to your PlayStation Portal most of the time. Maybe not all the time, but it shouldn't be a huge issue for a lot of people. That's what I think. I might be wrong, though, because a lot of people are mad about it.
I think most people are mad because I think less about the Wi-Fi and more about the fact that, like, it almost is a completely pointless device.
Yeah, I think generally, I don't think that good of a device, no. But yeah.
Because Fraser has the, like, phone console,
the backbone
that they released a little while ago, where it lets you play PlayStation games on your phone using the backbone, like, controller, which is way cheaper than the £199.99 that you would have to spend on a PlayStation Portal. I think that, like, the premise is good. Like, oh, your TV's occupied, you can play it on your handheld. Mm-hmm. That's fair enough. But I also think that maybe they've just not gone far enough with it. The fact that you can't play cloud streaming games on your device, which, I mean, doesn't really makes sense. If you're using over Wi-Fi anyway, surely it should be able to pull games from the cloud. I asked the community, and most people said that they were either not going to buy it or they were going to wait until they could jailbreak it and then install Game Pass on it.
Well, I was going to say, that's assuming it runs any kind of reasonably strong hardware, because it probably has something going on in there, but it's not designed to run games. So
no, it's essentially may not just be a very screen with a Wi-Fi port,
But there might be a way, potentially, for some very clever people, given that it is Wi-Fi connected, there might be a way to jailbreak it to do too. Streaming.
Could do.
But yeah, I just think it's kind of not, it's like not far enough of a jump for it to be kind of justifiable. I can see why they're doing it, but like I say, it doesn't feel necessary when they've already got the much cheaper backbone. I know not everyone's phones can like cloud stream effectively without, I mean, mine would overheat very quickly, I imagine. But I do think that there's enough of a market for people who've want to do this, who are already doing it. But I think that the fact that it doesn't cloud stream is the thing that's the biggest letdown about it. Because if you're going to have a cloud streaming service, why wouldn't you make your own Wi-Fi device compatible with it?
It
doesn't
just seem like a strange thing to have done.
Mm. Yeah. It's an incredibly niche device that solves a niche issue that not a lot of people have. As much as I enjoy the idea of playing PS5 games in bed or whatever, if the TV's occupied, I have two televisions for this specific reason, so it's not going to be an issue for me because my household has a lot of video games being played in it, and that just seemed like a worthwhile investment to me, and it has certainly paid off that way. A lot of people travel for work and they don't want to take stuff with them. In the case of our social media manager Fraser, or community manager Fraser, he he travels down to London a fair amount to see his partner, and that's where he does the majority of his remote play or xCloud streaming, and he does use the Backbone for that, you're right. So I did actually ask him what he thinks of this, because he's the... While I've heard a lot of people going, this isn't really for me, I have also heard a number of people say, this is exactly for me. This is perfect for me. And so I thought if anyone was going to have some positive thoughts on it, it'd be Fraser. And Fraser's not too keen on it either. He said, Fraser uses remote play mostly when he's away, does some remote play and a large amount of xCloud streaming. Personally, I'm not really excited, but I can see the appeal of it. Although being able to remote play with DualSense features enabled, having it being its own device so it won't drain phone battery life, and with it running on Android, there is... Hang on, that was just a full stop there. There is potential to see... To sideload emulators onto the device, which is very exciting. However, I personally feel like a Backbone is a better investment, as it allows to go outside the PlayStation ecosystem. So you can use it for more things, whereas this obviously will be very specialized. I do think that people like myself, like you two, like many others who are saying, what's the point in this? This is pointless. I think that almost is the point, because it's clearly just not for us. It's weird that Sony have spent so much money to develop this device when it really is going to be for a very select group of people who have a very specific need. And for those people, this is going to be great. However, £200 does seem like a lot. That is, with the current price reductions for the PS5 in the UK, more than half the price of the PS5.
Yeah.
And at that point, I think if I was traveling around, I'd almost rather just lug my PS5 around with me, which I know isn't convenient and not doable for everyone. But it's a cool looking device.
Especially given that there might be a Slim on the way as well.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a cool looking device and it clearly serves a function, but it's not going to be something that I need or will want to use.
Sony's MO at the moment just seems to be releasing a thing for their console that is for a very small amount of people. Like that seems
and then
like,
charging way too much
and then it. Charging way too much for it. Like I know the PlayStation VR 2 wasn't for necessarily as small amount of people as this is, but it felt quite niche. Then the changeable controller, that feels quite niche.
You got the new earbuds coming.
The new earbuds. Again, some people will like that, but the vast majority of people already have things that are doing this, so it feels very much like...
But hey, you all want backwards compatibility?
Nah. No. How dare you?
Unfortunately, our R&D department are working on something really important.
Yeah.
It's a Move controller with a screen built in.
Oh, sick. It's a pregnancy test you can play Doom on. I think that like there is definitely times in my life where I could be like, yeah, this would be useful.
Yeah.
But I also think that for things like going traveling, I would never bother bringing it with me because there's no point.
They recommend 15 megabits of internet guaranteed. And if you're going on a holiday, there is no guarantee that you're going to get that.
No, exactly. Like you might be, if you're staying in like a hotel or at Airbnb and you've left your console on at home, I'm sure you could probably give it a good go. But there'll be a good, like, I don't know, 12 hours before you leave, like where you can't actually use it, when there's devices that you can use a lot easier, like your Steam Decks and your Switches. So it just feels... like I say, half-assed. Like it doesn't feel like they've gone quite far enough with it, where it feels like everyone will be able to use it. It's for a niche amount of people, and for them, great. But they've probably already got alternatives because they've waited this long. Yeah.
It's a really cool-looking device, and I agree that it's a shame that it's an LCD screen rather than an OLED screen. But you know, that's probably a way to keep costs down, even though this thing I think is way overpriced. But I could see a scenario where if it was £100, excuse me. And then maybe there was a reduction further down the line. I could see it on a little dock next to my TV. And I'm like, I want to go to bed, but also I'd like to keep playing Baldur's Gate 3. And then I can just pick up my little thing and then go upstairs and then play it. I admittedly have not tried remote play for a long time. And the amount of people, which admittedly still isn't a huge amount, but the amount of people I know who play remote play and seem to have no issues with it leads me to believe that it's come a long way than where it was, because it used to be crap.
Yeah.
And at that point, I basically swore off it. Like, this just doesn't work. This is a very inferior experience and I'm not interested in having it. It's clearly got to the point where they can justify charging £200 for a dedicated device, but it's not necessary for me. Yeah. And I don't think I need one of these.
Right.
Well, no. Should we just let it hang for a little?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Well, now it's time to talk about the things that we have been playing in the segment that we are calling What We Play In.
It's what we play in time. Time to talk about the games. What we have been playing. Peter Austin.
Yeah.
What have you been playing?
Well, I had hoped that today I'd be able to talk about how much I've played Starfield and enjoyed it. But unfortunately, I tried to install it yesterday. Turns out, so I'm a member of Game Pass now. It's very exciting.
Wow.
Welcome.
Game Pass PC specifically. PC? Because I don't have a console, Xbox console. But unfortunately, when you... It turns out this is a bit of a known issue, a bit of a problem that people have experienced worldwide, which is that downloading games onto your PC via the Xbox Game Pass app, whatever it's called, the download speed can be really slow at times. And I checked my actual download speed on my computer and it was like, it was fine. It was fast. And I was getting like 5 Mbps to download my copy of Starfield. So it took like, I mean, I just left it going last night. I don't even know how long it took in the end because I just left it when I went to bed. But it took many hours to download the game last night, which is a real shame. Maybe that was partly because there might have been a lot of people trying to download Starfield all at the same time. And I guess that probably affects things in a way. So sadly, no Starfield for me on today's podcast, but I am going to play it tonight and probably all week. So next week, I'll tell you all about that. I have, though, in the meantime, been playing... I've been doing an Ashton, and I've been playing Dishonored, which I have played through, I think, to completion in the past. Yeah, I have. I completed it in the past, but I've never played Dishonored 2. And I have a hard copy of Dishonored 2 on my shelf that I have just never even put into my console. So I've been thinking... I should really do that. I've heard it's not as good as the first one, but that, you know, if you like Dishonored 1, you probably still like the sequel. That's what most people
say. I need to finish Dishonored 2. I never finished it.
Right.
Have you got to the cool level yet?
I don't know.
The really clever one?
I don't think so.
Okay, you'll know when you get to it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But I thought before I jump into Dishonored 2, I'm going to play Dishonored 1, partly to just kind of refresh my memory, but also because I really like that game.
Mm.
So I've been hanging out with Granny Rags. And
How is she?
She's all right, yeah. Just muttering to herself, making bird noises. She's good. Having a good time.
Good.
So I've been enjoying that. I really like the aesthetic of that game. I forget how much I like it and how everything is a little bit almost sort of cartoony, but not. Mm. You know, everyone's got sort of accentuated features. And then also, I'm not going to lie, I've, for two evenings this week, I've just played The Unholy War on my PS4 emulator because it's its birthday in 2 weeks. It's going to be 25 years old.
Wow.
God, same age as me.
Same age as you and Spyro the Dragon. And Toys for Bob, current developers of Spyro, were the original developers of Unholy War. And sadly, Spyro's getting a big 25 years anniversary on social media. Not looking for... T-U-W.
Now, that is really strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they celebrate such a niche
niche dead game that no one even remembers? Most of the time when you see the discourse online, someone will post like a clip of that on some like niche or PS1 game footage Twitter account or something.
Mm.
And almost all the comments you ever see on Unholy War footage or images is... Oh, I forgot what this game was called, but I enjoyed this. No one knows what it's called because it is a bit of a rubbish name, to be honest.
It is a bit of a rubbish name.
So that is what I've played twice this week, and I'll be probably streaming it in 2 weeks' time for its anniversary.
Amazing.
But yeah, Dishonored is what I've been playing on my PS5. And then I've got Starfield as well, so I'll be busy next week.
Hmm.
Ashton, what have you been playing?
I've played some more Spiritfarer. I was waiting for Starfield to come out, so I kind of haven't been like diving into something new. But I've almost finished Spiritfarer now. The game goes on way longer than I thought it was going to be. Every time I'm like, I must be near the end now, and then it keeps going. And I'm like, oh, okay, we've got to save another person. Gotcha. And also I played Starfield, and I won't talk about it too much because I know we're about to do a review corner. But I played about 4 hours last night when I got home from work, and I'm enjoying it so far. I feel overwhelmed by the amount of stuff that's in the game. There's like loads, obviously, like you get side quests when you're walking past people, and I'll be like, go check on this guy because this random person you walk past, they mentioned it. So there's been like a few little bugs here and there. Like I couldn't get one of the tutorial like pop-ups to go away for ages. It was just kind of hanging out at the top of the screen. And at one point it told me about a guy that said, go talk to the guy under the tree. And I was like, there's not a single tree where I am. I'm very confused. And then it turns out he was in a different place. I had to just go find a different, yeah. But I don't know why I had the mission. But yeah, I I'm enjoying it and I'm definitely going to jump back into it, but I do feel already like there's a lot that I'm not going to do in terms of like game, less so about side missions and more so about in-game mechanics like outpost building and ship building and so on and so forth. I already feel overwhelmed with the amount of stuff in that game. But yeah, I'm enjoying it so far. It runs all right on my PC. I had to turn it down to medium because any higher than that was making my graphics card scream. But yeah, I have been enjoying that so far.
I saw a tweet from former colleague and nice boy Scott Telford from What Culture, who said something like, this isn't spoilery, something like, I've looked at the trophy list for a main story mission. And he said something like only 18% of players or something had got this trophy so far. And he said that main story mission, which is, comes fairly early on, unlocks like quite a big gameplay component that like really sort of changes things. So perhaps based on secondhand advice, you might want to sort of press a bit of a beeline through the main quest to unlock whatever this thing is.
Is this why? Because I know we shouldn't be talking much about it because I also haven't had a chance to play yet. But I am curious if that is really why they've been hammering home, hey, the game doesn't start until you finish the main story.
Yeah.
If there's actively gameplay mechanics locked behind it.
Yeah.
He said that one was early on, but people have also said the actual end game when you completely finish the main story is also quite a big deal.
It's where the real Dark Souls begins. Okay.
It doesn't tell you much though, to be fair. Going into it, the first few missions, like the only reason I knew what to do is because my Ben previously played like about half an hour of it while he was on his lunch break yesterday. So then he was like, oh, to do this, you have to do that. And I was like, I would never have figured this out. I was like, how do I change weapon? I can't get my weapons out. And Ben's like, oh, well, you have to go into your inventory and put it on a slot and then you can do it. But it didn't tell me that. So I was very confused. So the initial part of the game, sometimes it tells you about things, sometimes it doesn't tell you about nothing. So
good.
Lots
of Googling to come there.
Yes.
Classic Elder Scrolls experience there. So many people, though, seem to be really, in many ways, because we've talked about it on this podcast before, how a lot of, especially the Elder Scrolls and to a certain extent Fallout as well, is that Western RPGs have come a long way since Skyrim came out, particularly with The Witcher. It's like, well, you know, what they used to do isn't really acceptable anymore. It's got to be more in depth than that and a bit more finely tuned. And it sounds like they've made some strides, but largely the gameplay is sort of unchanged. But the reaction from the public online seems to be of sort of celebrating that, which is quite nice to see. I saw like a post with thousands of likes this morning on Twitter that said that classic Bethesda loop of reaching the end of a dungeon, opening a big chest and then opening a small door that takes you back to the beginning. There's nothing like it. And it's like, yeah, I suppose there is this game, which is, I mean, this isn't a groundbreaking observation because this is what everyone who's reviewed it has said, but it certainly seems that it's divisive in the sense that people who like Bethesda games are going to love it.
Mm.
And people who perhaps have been spoiled by more recent, you know, endeavors may not enjoy it as much. But I am really looking forward to giving it a go.
Yeah.
And I would have jumped into it on Tuesday night at midnight because I stayed up. I had my caffeinated beverage and I was playing Final Fantasy 16, desperately trying to finish that. And I was like nodding off in the middle of boss fights. And then it got to midnight and I was like, yes, all right, here we go. Went to start it.
Yeah.
Yep. Went to start it. A little message popped up and said, oh, we know you're really keen to play your new game, but we're not quite ready yet. And I was like, what? And I Googled it. 1 a.m. Why?
Weird. Because that's not midnight for anyone.
No.
Except maybe Iceland or something.
Is it because it's BST at the moment? I'm not entirely sure. Does that even make sense? I was not cross, but I did feel very sad because I was like, I'm so tired.
In fact, it can't even be that it's BST because we're forward in time in BST. Yeah,
it should have been 11 p.m. on Tuesday. Either way, though, that was my opportunity to play it and I have not had a chance to play it since. Going back to that question we had last week about too many games to play, I am well and truly in that situation now where I need to finish Final Fantasy 16. Mm. I've just got Baldur's Gate 3. And Starfield, and I do not have the time. So by next week's podcast, I will have played some, but I'm not going to be able to touch it until Sunday, I don't think so.
Mm. Also, I was wrong what I just said. It could actually, that would make sense.
Oh, would it?
Yeah, because it's like we're on the continent. So GMT midnight is 1 a.m. East, like Western Europe. So yeah, that could be why it happened. They just set it to midnight at GMT and didn't think about the fact that
we're in bus.
It was really annoying.
Unless you're in South Africa, no one's on GMT at the moment.
I was not really mentally in a place to even start it because I would have played it for about 20 minutes.
Beginning starting a game at midnight, and then I got to go to work the next day.
Well, the thing is, it felt quite poetic because I did it for Fallout 4 because I was really excited for that, and I pre-ordered that digitally through the PS4, and I was watching it count down until it unlocks, and I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to stay up and play it, and I played it until like 3 a.m. just building bases, and I had a great time, and then I had to go to work, and I was knackered, and I thought, I'm 31, I can still do that. I could barely make it to midnight.
Microsoft were like,
No, we're not going to tell you yet. No. To be fair, they probably did tell people. But I just, woe is me. Woe is me. Shame on me for assuming that it was midnight, every other game.
Yeah.
What an idiot. So none of that. But I have been desperately trying to finish Final Fantasy 16. I think I'm right at the final boss now. But I have also been doing all the optional hunts. And I have got side quest fatigue in that game big time.
Oh, good news. You're going to get side quest fatigue in Starfield too.
Well, yes, probably. However, I started off by doing all the side quests as and when they popped up because, you know, after every main mission, a few more appear. And I would, like, listen to what everyone was saying. And I was like, okay. And then I took a step down from that to I'm going to read the subtitles. And as soon as I've finished reading your line, I'm going to skip your dialogue so I can get through this as fast as possible. To then it taking me far too long to realize that every single side quest is conversation, conversation, conversation. Go over here, kill this thing, come back, more conversation, quest completed. And that's every single side quest. And so now I've reached the point where I am just pressing the pause button and skipping the entire conversation. So I've got no context. I'm just going to places and killing things, which is a shame because it seems like the final side quests are all, they're meant to be sort of closing the, you know, coming full circle on certain side characters and their arcs and things. I'm like, I'm done. Like I've completely mentally checked out the side quests in this game, which is a shame, but I am still enjoying it despite that, and hopefully I will be done with it very soon. I am well and truly ready for it to be over now. I feel like I've been playing it forever. So Diablo 4 is another one I played a tiny bit of. I can't remember if I said last week that I have now seen the credits in that game, so I've finished the main story, and with everything else, all the other games, it's unlikely that I'll be going back to it anytime soon, but I may dip in every now and then. And that's what I've been playing.
Good. Now it's time to head over to that spacey corner over there and talk about Starfield in Review Corner. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Review Corner, where me and James Jenkins...
What?
We're going to talk about a little unknown game, Starfield.
Oh, boy.
We've both figured out that we're at relatively similar points, but I feel like you may have played a few more hours than I have.
I've done a lot more, like, messing around and exploring and stuff, I guess. But yeah, we've essentially... Like, I did land on, like, a couple of extra planets, but apart from that, yeah, it sounds like we've had sort of similar experiences.
Yeah.
How are you finding it overall?
I am enjoying it. I feel a bit overwhelmed, which I did say during the podcast, with the amount of stuff that there is, but from what I have played and like the actual side quests and bits and pieces that I've done so far, I have really enjoyed it. Obviously it's not a full review. We've only played like 7 or 8 hours.
Probably, yeah, about 8 hours.
And I played about 4 hours. So this isn't like a full review, but this is like our initial impressions.
That's it. Barely scratching the surface.
So exactly. I've been enjoying it, but I do feel like there is a lot to do.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to sort of give a full thing of like how everything fits together. But again, from what I've seen so far, it sort of introduced quite a few things, and there's still things I haven't like delved into yet. It feels like it all sort of slots in. I mean, my big thing, first of all, like, if you're not aware, it's first new IP from Bethesda. It's that typical Bethesda. It's that RPG that, you know, you know and possibly love from Skyrim and Fallout, but it's in space. NASA punk style. But my two things were, first of all, like, is it a good game? I mean, just the short option, yeah, I think very good. Maybe not like, you know, absolutely going to blow everyone's minds no matter who you are and what you think, but very good for me so far. Is it a good Bethesda game? Because that's a whole like different kind of thing, really.
Yeah. And
I think, yeah, mostly, but there's a few missed opportunities. And I'm like, oh.
You think?
And very, very sort of minor nitpicks. And we'll get to that in a minute. But let's talk about, like, the good stuff.
Yeah.
Can I ramble?
You okay? Go for it. I'll stop you if you ramble too much.
Cool. First of all, as you said, it's there's so much to do. We've barely scratched the surface. Like, you know, you've got like all your main faction quests and side missions and like Radiant quest, I suppose, is what they're meant to be, with these mission boards. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, research these things, chase down ships and stuff.
Yeah, like there is one mission board that's like the Trade Authority, where it's literally just you've got something on your ship, drive to planet, you've done it, thank you so much,
yeah,
you're done that. Which is kind of a bit random and like almost not enough, but yeah.
Yeah, it sounds rubbish when taken in isolation, but I have always sort of viewed that with all of these Bethesda games as like, these are not the main attractions, that's the sort of
yeah, you can do it if you want. Things.
Yeah, which is cool. Just so many like gameplay mechanics in there, so you've got, you know, your ship combat and your ground combat. Actual sort of gunplay feels really good. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, not Call of Duty levels, but I was very surprised with that, having, you know, suffered through Fallout, and it's not the strong suit for Fallout, although mm-hmm. Fallout 4 was pretty good. Very impressed there. You know, you've got ship building, you've got a lot of exploration if you just want to land out on like random planets, scan stuff, etc., etc. A lot of dialogue options, but yeah, I think for me as well, this was going to be a tricky one, because there was a lot of talk about empty planets and loading screens and, oh, you can't run all the way around a planet. First of all, why would you?
Why would you want to? Yeah.
But for me, I think with the whole exploration theme, which is what they were sort of going for, it's kind of nailed that so far. Like I said, I've landed on like just a couple of planets. So from what I've seen that is outside of like the main quest, it feels like there's always something to do. So like, yeah. I take it their sort of system is it generates like this quite big area and then like a few sort of notable points. And that may seem a bit like, oh, just randomly generated, that's a bit rubbish. But all of them fit in so well from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like any other sort of Bethesda game. Like, I landed on two different spots on the same planet just to see how it sort of does it. It was like Iceus sort of, you know, polar ice cap bit. There was, you know, one was like an old mech graveyard, and it was like, okay, it's sort of generic-ish bad guys, but then, you know, a little, the classic Bethesda note, and then there's more to explore, and then you find like a spooky mm-hmm. cave, very atmospheric. And then in the other spot, there was like a robot-only facility and like, you know, and another sort of cave that looked like quite different. And yeah, again, a big facility on this other sort of moon area that I found. Yeah, it feels like there's a lot there.
There is a lot. Yeah. I mean, even in like the popularized, where people are, wherever you are in those big cities, populated, thank you, you're just walking past people and they'll give you quests, very Skyrim-esque, so of hey, did you know that this bartender's having problems? Other guy I'm talking to? And I'm like, well, I guess gotta go figure that out. And obviously it all adds to your quest log. I think that's a really fun aspect. I think that my issue with that is that you can't sort by planet, which I would like very much in my mission log.
Would be nice.
I don't really love flying the spaceship. I'm fine with fast traveling in my spaceship, but I've been finding the kind of like flying a little bit jarring. I also feel like it doesn't tell you really much how to play the game.
It's very vague.
Yeah, when you kick up, like, be kind of at the beginning, you get into a little bit of a shooting match with some pirates. And I didn't know how to change weapon, because I knew I'd picked up a gun, but I was still holding my, like, mining laser. And the only reason I figured it out is because my boyfriend had played ahead of me, and he was like, press this button, then this button. but there was a kind of a lot of aspects of the, like, inventory system and other bits of the game where I'm kind of feeling like I'm not... Not I want to be babied through it, but I'd like to be explained to a little bit more.
A little bit clearer. And I think, there is, I know there's like a thing that's like, you know, on the pause option is help. I mean, that is literally just, you know, if you want to read through the glossary, but mm-hmm. I know what you mean. Like, I felt the same thing. It felt like it teaches you some of these things very briefly and then doesn't mention it again.
Yeah.
Very easy to miss. But yeah, like on that instance, I feel that's one of my biggest like nitpicks with this. It's even at the start, it's so menu heavy. There's a lot of menu navigation.
Yeah, it's quite a lot.
And yeah, I feel like it could have been streamlined in some way or another. And I think that does, you know, again, you know, mods have already apparently fixed it for PC for the inventory, which isn't great. Again, they have to do the same Skyrim, I think Fallout as well. But hey, the issue for me with that is the space travel. Like you said, like I also don't mind the fact that it's loading screens and stuff, but I think there's a nice middle ground there, because my big problem is like I'm sat right in front of this big planet. I can't scan the planet unless I go into my menu again, my map system, and then press a button, unless there's a way I've not found of doing it. But yeah, that's a weird one. And then it feels like, because I've played a little bit of like Elite Dangerous and yeah, a little bit of No Man's Sky, not expecting it to be like seamless, but and sort of nice middle ground where maybe the map comes up as an overlay rather than it feeling like you're going into the pause menu.
I also have a problem with the map. In that when you're on a planet and you're like searching for missions, you can't see the area of the planet on your map. Like it doesn't kind of come up, especially in the cities. I would just kind of like an idea of like where I am.
And it doesn't have a city map.
No, it doesn't have a city map. You can like zoom in and it says like show like a planet surface, but that just shows you like the kind of the biome. It doesn't really give you an idea, which is those are my only problems really.
Yeah,
is that it feels the menu feels convoluted, the map's not very clear, and I don't really like flying. But for the most part, like I have enjoyed what I've played, and talking to people was interesting. I'm a space scoundrel, so I've got better persuasion.
I went for the exact same
thing. Oh my god, everyone I've spoken to has gone for space scoundrel, god and I damn. Really like it that you can pick traits and stuff before you get going. I was too worried about picking a faction before I went into it, because I was worried that like I would pick one that I didn't like. So I have parents. I also have a fan that currently lives on my spaceship.
No, not the adoring fan.
Yeah,
amazing.
And he lives on my spaceship, and he says nice things about me whenever I walk past. And I think I also picked empath, so I can talk to people in a different way. And I think that's really a nice element of like how you can tailor it to yourself. I know that's like typical RPG stuff, but
but it's a good point, especially given like I think the trajectory of Bethesda games over the years have been like people have complained about it being like less RPG elements in there. You know, Skyrim dumbed things down from Oblivion, Fallout 4 did the same for Fallout 3 and New Vegas. This is really cool, and it's a great sort of return to like that old school sort of RPG feel. I love that character creator in terms of like the options it gave you, and I almost went with Chef. I've got like four sort of a playthrough character builds is written down in my notes because I'm a massive nerd, and one of them is like some space chef. And it's I like the fact that you've got a lot of different options there, and apparently those will all I mean I've had that sort of very briefly sort of dialogue options pop up based on your background and your skills and stuff. Obviously persuasion is a different thing. I'm a big fan of that. I am coming off the back of like Baldur's Gate 3. I mean, I'm not even close to finishing that yet. So it's maybe some unfair comparisons in my own head with that, in that has so much like variety, and it's obviously contained a lot more and a lot denser. But yeah, if you're not going to get quite the same amount of options with dialogue as you would with that. But it is, especially for this sort of Bethesda style, very impressive. I really like that. I like the skills. There's a lot of different you know, options for so it's a blend of like, you know, the Fallout perks, and then you learn by doing as well, kind of like and stuff. So that's really cool. I really wanted to try out like, I forget what they're called, but they basically operate like, you know, fear or calm from like Elder Scrolls, where it's like you can scare off an enemy.
Yes.
I have no idea how that's going to work.
No.
But I'm very intrigued by that.
Yeah.
And just in terms of like other things I've sort of written down, I know we shouldn't sort of ramble too far, but like, you know, the sounds, music, all of that, really cool.
Yeah.
The actual like dialogue and like voice acting, I'm really impressed by.
Yeah.
It's so nice to like and realize that the entire universe is not populated by just six voice actors.
Yes. So, yeah. But it is populated almost entirely by human people.
That's true.
That's one thing. We've taken over the entire universe. That's fine.
Whatever. It's what we do.
Yeah. But in general, Starfield, it's good. It's lived up to its expectations in the sense of, I think, that like people had to temper their expectations because realistically it is still a Bethesda game.
Yeah.
But I do think that if you enjoy a Bethesda game and you like an RPG and you like space, then Starfield is brilliant. And I think people are going to get a lot of fun from it.
That's right. Yeah, pretty much the same. It's like a lot of nitpicking there were complaints about the game that we've seen online. That people are making it into a big deal. I say, oh, I can't walk across a planet. Things are separated by loading screens. Those are annoyances to some degree, depending on, you know, what you're expecting and whatnot. But this is more of like, this is your Bethesda game in space. It's not like a space like Sim.
Yeah.
It's and how they've done that is overall pretty damn good. I mean, I can't wait to see, you know, what mods do, because of course Bethesda game mods are gonna push it.
They're already happening now.
Exactly. I love the fact that they fixed the inventory and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, overall, it's definitely worth... I mean, if you've got Game Pass already, so say obviously it's on Xbox, PC, but on Game Pass, like, you already got it, it's absolutely worth just a few hours to see if it's the right thing for you. But if you like Bethesda games, it is massive. There's a lot to do. You'll probably like it, I think.
Yes, I think so too. Well, there we have it. There was our Starfield review corner. I'm sure there will be lots more discussion about Starfield in the next few weeks from all of us on what we're playing. Yep. But for now, we'll send you back to the rest of the podcast.
Bye-bye.
It's time for question two now, which comes from Hannah O'Neill. Hi, BAP. With rumours going around that GTA 6 having a release price of $150... that's assuming that's just standard edition and not a deluxe or collector's edition. How much is too much when it comes to what we as gamers are realistically expecting to pay for one title? Loved SMTJ on Saturday. Love ya, Hannah.
Love you, thanks, Hannah.
Thank you, Hannah.
If GTA 6 costs $150, I will not be buying it. I will not. I refuse to support that as a business model. Mm-hmm. I don't care what. I would even feel the same if flipping Spyro 4 came out and they were going to charge me $150. I would value it at $150 specifically because I'm a huge fan of the series and I would be tempted to get it in that sense. It would be worth that much to me, but I would be that pissed off that a publisher thinks that they can charge that much for a game that I would like to think I would boycott even that game. But certainly GTA, it is just complete... it's all just rumor at the moment, and maybe someone's got the wrong end of the stick and they've like heard about some deluxe edition and maybe that's got $150 price point and they've got their wires crossed. But until we hear more, it's difficult to say. But if this game costs that much, and I appreciate it's clearly got a massive budget. In fact, haven't they said it's got the biggest budget
like
of all time?
$2 billion.
Yeah. Something. So, of course, they have to make their money back. But let's face it, they didn't struggle to make their money back with the previous game and with GTA Online. So they could charge a perfectly normal price or even just something a little bit higher. But $150, if they've basically doubled the price of the game compared to what you would expect from any other release of that size... I will be very cross. That's basically all I have to say on the matter, that I will not be paying that much.
What is the maximum you think like you'd pay for a standard edition? In my mind, I kind of rationalize it of like, if it's more than a weekly shop, I can't justify buying it.
That's the thing. It's the justification of it as well. It's like, even if it is kind of worth that much to you as an experience, it's like, yeah, but what else could I spend $150 on? Or however many pounds that is, 130 quid or something.
Yeah,
that practically gets you 17 inches of Venom, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
All 17 experience.
Gets you
about
17
all
inches
17
of Dominoes as well. Almost.
Yeah. I think. I mean, I would resent paying more than I think I'm already paying for.
Yeah.
For standard editions.
At my limit, almost.
Yeah, like a £70 game in my mind, I have to rationalize that as like, right, how much am I actually going to get out of this game? Like maybe for Spider-Man, I will pay £70 for it because I know that two people will play it and get a good, you know, 30 hours out of it. However, I would be unwilling to pay more than that. If Spider-Man comes out and they're like, yes, £100 for this game, I wouldn't buy it. Categorically would not. I'd wait for it to come up, down in the sales or something. Because I, in my mind, I'm like, if you can't justify, if you're charging me £150 because you spent too much money on your game, that's not my fault.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pay off your bills. If you're paying, if you're spending $2 billion on a game and then you're charging me £150, you got me messed up. I'm not paying your bills. You need to budget better. That's what they always say to us. Don't get those avocado, don't pay for Netflix, and then you can buy a house. How about don't spend $2 billion or something, and then you can sell your game for a normal amount of money. I think people would buy it for £150, but that's because people are sheep. And they'll buy it because it's got GTA in the front of it. But I will resent them for the rest of my life and theirs if they paid £150 for Grand Theft Auto 6.
Yeah.
And if I'm not even going to get a cool watch, well, I'm not going to pay £150 for it. You're crazy. And I think even for pre-order, if they were like, yes, £100 and you get like a week early, no thanks. I'm not paying another £30 for a week. You're crazy. £100 too much, categorically too much.
Yeah. Barring the fact that if they did charge $150, they would immediately price out the majority of their player base.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because there it wouldn't even be a case of not paying that in, you know, as a matter of principle. It would be a case of that being completely unaffordable to most people.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Especially in a cosy lives.
In a cosy lives. The fact remains that this rumored price is pure conjecture.
Yeah.
There is no source for this. This is precisely what we were talking about the other week with these rumors and how someone just makes up some bollocks and then loads of websites run with it. And the respectable websites will say, okay, we're reporting on this because it's trending all over the internet, but just so you know, this is bollocks.
Yeah.
Like there is no verifiable truth to this whatsoever. This is one of those. And it came from the fact that the cost of development was rumored to be $2 billion. Mm. And people were saying, oh, well, you know, how could they make their money back? And probably someone on a podcast said, I don't know, they could charge like $150. Yeah. And then people went, what? They're charging $150? Mm-hmm. And it's a game of the, you know, the telephone game. And eventually everyone believes that it's going to be $150. There is zero proof for this.
Mm-hmm.
There is absolutely no proof. So you're going to want to, as Dextero have said, take this with a huge pinch of salt. I don't know why I struggled to say that.
A handful of salt.
Yeah, basically a bucket load of salt.
Mm.
This is another one of those stories that has no basis.
But saying that, I do think it does bring up a good discussion about the price of games. Mm-hmm. And if
absolutely
this did happen, what precedent it would set for the rest of the games.
Because you're
industry
right, Ashton.
It would be so damaging.
If someone asks the question, how much is too much? I was kind of thinking, well, sort of £70, really.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was trying to think, like, how much further would I go? And I was like, would I go any further? I mean, I would for a few special things, perhaps, but it's already kind of where I really draw
because
the line.
When the prices started going up to like £70, we all talked about the fact that this was quite expensive. Mm. And it was like, is £70 a justifiable amount of money? And then with inflation in, you know, everyone's mind, it's just going to keep going up. And it's the thing is, people are going to keep buying the games. And if you buy a game for £150 because you're like, oh, well, not everyone will. Everyone who thinks that that's going to buy the game, and then suddenly all games are £150.
I mean, there'll come a time when we're all paying £100 because that's just because of inflation. Like in some years' time, that's how much £100 will be worth. It'll be the equivalent of £70 today. But it's whether there's just a massive artificial spike like this. That's the problem.
Someone's going to try it. And I hope it's soundly defeated. And I also hope that it's a game that isn't as significant as GTA 6. Because that would just be, I mean, it would be greed on an unprecedented scale for a start.
Mm-hmm.
And also basically them throwing their weight around. Like, yeah, we know we are going to be the biggest game in the world once we release it. So we can charge $150.
Yeah.
And I personally resent that. I do also believe, as I said, that the vast majority of their existing player base will not buy it because they can't. And that's just the fact. A lot of people can't even, you know, afford the £70 that we're paying currently. It's just too much. So unless it goes on some sort of subscription pass system, or there's like a tiered release where you can have a free to play version depending on how far they lean into the online stuff, which we still don't know how integrated that's going to be. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any truth to the $150, and if there is, it's a huge
mistake. Standard edition
as
least.
A standard edition, it's a huge mistake.
Imagine if it was $150 for standard edition GTA 6 and GTA Online is separate. Mm. So it's $150 just for single player.
And then
player.
£50 for online.
That's it. That's even worse value, because most people play it just for GTA Online. Exactly, and all I would be interested in is the single player. Mm-hmm. I would want to try that, and that's it. Yeah. So bonkers. But also, this rumor is nonsense. So please ignore it.
Hopefully.
Until we hear more information.
Imagine if it's not nonsense and they come out being like, oh yeah, well, you got us. It's going to be £150.
Well, I mean, this rumor might be giving them ideas. That's the thing, because it's basically free market research, because some clown said, what if it's $150? And then it's spiraled out from there.
I wouldn't do that.
Be worth it. Worth every penny.
Madness. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. But it's time now. Something a bit strange.
Something a bit weird.
And it's also hot and happening right now. It's time for weird news.
Oh. Hot and happening. Weird news.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. Remember, if you'd like to submit some weird video game news to us, you can do so on the relevant social media channel on a Tuesday. However, if you'd like to guarantee a shout out at this point in the podcast, go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump. Support us at a certain tier and become a podcast producer just like
G.Y. Goliath,
Nicole Hansen,
Duncan Wilson,
Katie Garrett or Jared,
Eric Siu,
Potato Shack 99,
Melody L. Bonnet,
Nexus Polaris,
Gabrielle Philippink,
Blake Thomas,
Mike Key,
and Janet Wicks. Thank you, podcast producers.
Thank you, podcast producers.
A couple of new ones there, I think.
Mm-hmm. Got weird news for us, Pete.
I've got weird news here. It was submitted by Gex at SnowyBoyYanny04 on Twitter, and also David Lever on Facebook. I didn't actually clock whether David Lever is a top fan.
I think David Lever might be a top
Probably
fan.
Probably is a top fan, but
he's one of our top fans.
Mm. Yeah.
We're a fan of David Lever.
So I've got the Kotaku write-up here. Starfield literally saved a couple from death.
Whoa.
A deadly apartment fire was escaped after one Redditor stayed up all night playing Bethesda's space game, says John Walker of Kotaku. Basically heard the entire story now, but I'll give you a short article. We all know that playing video games makes you cooler, stronger, and more attractive. But for Reddit user TidyCKiller, I think that's how you say it, it made him and his wife remain far more alive. Staying up late to binge Starfield is the reason credited for how the couple escaped a deadly fire in their apartment. Starfield literally saved mine and my family's life on September 1st, the post begins. After explaining for how long he'd been anticipating playing, the not dead person continues. On the night of August 31st, I decided to stay up and play as long as possible to experience this new universe. At 2:26 in the morning, while playing the game, I heard an explosion from my downstairs neighbor's apartment. It seems it was no small explosion, and the resulting fire was in an awful rush, says Kotaku. I paused my game to see what was happening. When I opened the door, I saw flames rising up our stairwell to our apartment. I immediately got my wife and cat, rushing us to safety with only minor burns. If I hadn't been up binging Starfield, I would have been asleep and we would have all died to smoke inhalation.
Wow. Do you not have smoke alarms? He should have smoke alarms in his house.
It might have been too late. Mm. I mean, they would have woken up.
But if he says smoke inhalation, that's true, but...
Yeah, maybe he means they would have woken us up, but then the fire would have been in the stairwell already.
It would have been bad.
Yeah. Bad.
Because he said when he saw it, it was already rushing up the stairwell, so he had to get out. So the post is accompanied by a photograph of the raging fire, thankfully viewed from the other side of the street from the apartment, not looking down into the stairwell.
A selfie of the fire.
I've got to stream this.
And frankly, it looks terrifying. The Redditor also posted some sad pictures of the aftermath of the fire in response to the inevitable conspiracists claiming the story was made up. This news report, hyperlinked, suggests tragically...
The downstairs neighbor didn't make it.
One neighbor was killed, while three others were rescued by firefighters, with the cause of the fire under investigation. It's further proof that staying up too late playing games is very good for you.
Mm. Mm. It's true. Unless it's, you know, a mid 1 a.m. unlock at that point.
Sorry, I forgot about this important last bit. I want to thank this game from saving my family and me from a horrible fate, says Tidy Sea Killer, before concluding, praise God, Howard.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Somebody died.
Goodness. This man wants a replacement Xbox, is what it sounds like.
Please, my Xbox caught fire.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
Wow. Well, I have some news where no one died, sent in by Nexus Polaris on Twitter on rectifygames.com. I don't know who it's by. Oh, Tyler Nineberg. Cool name. Winner of Sonic the Hedgehog 2, Xbox Series S, and controllers traded it all to GameStop.
Boo.
Oh, wow. Boo. In 2022, when Sonic the Hedgehog 2 came to theaters, Microsoft partnered up with Paramount Pictures to give away a one-of-a-kind Xbox Series S. Though, I'll tell you in a minute, there's a bit of drama about that as well.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, there is.
In June, Twitter user at mcnick01 shared the winner of the sweepstakes traded the Sonic the Hedgehog 2 Xbox Series S and the two furry controllers representing Sonic and Knuckles to local GameStop. The Xbox Series S and the two furry controllers Sonic and Knuckles to a local GameStop.
Yes, we did. We covered this at the time, didn't we? We did, on the podcast. Yeah, the fluffy controllers.
Yeah. Not only did he trade in these extremely rare items to GameStop, but he also ripped the fur off the controllers because he said it was uncomfortable.
Oh my God.
Why trade it
That's
in?
That's the point. Yeah. Like, it's a joke, isn't it?
Everyone knows that trade-ins are poor value. Mm. And this... allegedly one-of-a-kind thing. If he'd sold it online,
that's
imagine
what people were saying.
Some of the Sonic fans who would have paid huge money for this.
What a waste.
So images of what the controllers look like now have not been shared, but someone might want to tell this person they miss out on a fortune. And then this guy tweeted that someone had traded it in because the winner traded it in. And then someone else replied with a picture of their Sonic Xbox saying, "Is this the part where I say I never sold it and don't plan to? Guess they made multiple of these things and had multiple winners." It turns out that they, in fact, made multiple consoles. They were not one of a kind at all. Mm. So there's at least two, one of which is owned by Tony. There's him with his console.
Yeah.
And the other one, which is currently in a GameStop. So
with torn controllers.
Torn controllers.
That's insane.
Yeah. But the guy who has the controllers that have not been ripped apart, he said that he hasn't ripped the fur off, but they are very uncomfortable to hold.
Yeah, I mean...
That's not for playing.
I was going to say, I would never play those. If they came in a box, I'd probably leave them in the box.
If you even have a little tiny bit of sticky on your hands, those furs would be sticky forever.
Yeah.
God.
Imagine the Cheeto dust getting on there.
Put them through the wash.
Yeah.
Just clank,
to get the
clank.
Cat brush out and make it nice and furry. Mm.
Goodness gracious. Yeah. What an idiot. Selling it.
Yeah, really silly.
Maybe
not even
like
selling it,
mom.
Trading it in.
Mm. Yeah, how much do you reckon he got for it? Like 50 quid?
They've said, the fur's damaged, so...
Well, what's this design you put on it? That's going to be worth less now. Yeah. No one's going to want this, so... Moron.
What a loser.
This news comes from Beck at Flamin' Beck on Twitter. This is from CNN Business.
Wow.
Hang on. Why Cup Noodles is going gamer friendly? This is actually a weird headline that makes the story sound like it's going in a completely different way.
Yeah.
It's actually just talking about some strange cup noodles that are coming out.
Right.
This is by Jesse Young and Yunko Ogura, maybe they argued about what headline they should
have. I think Cup Noodles are objectively already gamer friendly.
Well, get ready.
Okay.
Because
they're going to get even more gamer friendly.
It gets worse.
Okay.
For dedicated gamers across Asia, late night sessions often mean chugging cans of Red Bull or snacking on fast food to stay awake. Fast food makes me fall asleep.
I don't think this person's ever played a video game at night.
It's CNN business. They know video games. But what about the greasy fingerprints left on keyboards or the danger of keeping drinks near gaming equipment?
Oh, no.
Tables don't exist. Noodle maker Nissin says it has the answer. Caffeinated cup noodles.
Sounds
what?
Disgusting.
The gaming population in Japan is growing year by year, especially among young people, and the number is said to have surpassed 50 million, the company said in a Monday news release. To meet this demand, Nissin Foods is launching a new gamer-friendly product for the first time in its history from its flagship brands Cup Noodles and Nissin Curry Meshi. The caffeinated noodles will come in two flavors, garlic and coffee. and black pepper yakisoba, which contains shrimp, pork, egg, and cabbage, and curry, which uses a base of pork and vegetables. Both products are sauce-based and soup-free, it says, so there is no need to worry about getting your hands or peripherals dirty.
I do like my noodles not soupy, so...
Yeah,
making them the perfect meal in between game-playing sessions, the release said. It added that the noodles were the strongest buff meshi, combining the words buff, that's probably pronounced differently, meaning an increase in one's attack, defense, recovery, or movement speed in a game. No, buff. And meshi, meaning meal. Very clever. The noodles will be released in Japan starting September the 18th, with the garlic and black pepper flavor priced at around $1.90 and the curry flavor sold at $2.
But how's the caffeine in it? Is it going to tell me?
Just in the ingredients.
I think it's just caffeinated, yeah. The news was met with enthusiasm. Go away, CNN. Go away. Was met with enthusiasm from some Japanese users on social media. The most powerful buff meal for gamers, containing the ingredients of an energy drink, one wrote on X, previously known as Twitter.
No
liquid in it, so no need to worry about an unexpected accident. I have to try this. And then it continues to go on about what video games are for the rest of the article, just in case you were unfamiliar.
Even if you can't taste that it's caffeinated, if it just sort of tastes like some noodles, just the thought of it kind of makes me feel unwell. Like
energy
I can feel the headache that it gives me by eating it.
Well, as someone who gets a tummy ache when they drink energy drinks and a tummy ache when they eat instant noodles, and that seems like a bad spell for me.
Like maybe. Half a cow.
Yeah, exactly. Mm,
God.
My dessert tummy also has a tummy ache.
I have sent it to my family member who lives in Japan and said, can you try and get some of these, please?
Yeah.
And they said, absolutely not, but I'll look. So, yeah, maybe. If we can get some, we'll try them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Maybe just die on camera. That would be fun, wouldn't it?
Well, maybe about like half an hour later.
Yeah.
If we eat it at the beginning of the podcast, then we might feel like crap halfway through.
In main menu. We could make our own caffeinated instant noodles.
Just
we could have a coffee one. We could have a monster one. We could have a Red Bull one. All the different flavors.
I hope you guys have fun eating that because I will not be able to.
Coward.
There would be a really easy recipe as well because it's just a packet of instant noodles and a can of Monster. And
just heat up the Monster, cook the noodles in the Monster, and then add the seasoning to that, I think.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Is there a way? You see these videos online, don't you, where it's like, I've got a McDonald's and a Coke. Can you make this into like a gourmet stuff?
Meal,
and they like reduce the Coke to make it a sort of sauce. And it's like, you could probably do that with Monster. We don't know how.
No.
But we could try.
Yeah.
Maybe we will. It's time, everybody, for the big discussion.
Yes, it is.
It's big discussion time. Time for the big video game discussion that this week comes courtesy of Sputnik. And Sputnik says, US-based TV and film actors have been on a well-publicized strike since the 13th of July, and its impact is starting to have an effect on Hollywood. It is now being reported that US-based video game voice actors are looking to join this strike action, wanting an 11% increase in pay rates. The last time video game voice actors went on strike back in 2016, it lasted 11 months. What are your thoughts on this potential development and its impact on the currently booming video game industry? Thank you, Sputnik.
Thank you, Sputnik.
Thank you, Sputnik.
Got a write-up here. from Stephen Totillo at Axios. SAG-AFTRA, the union that has a contract with leading gaming companies for actors who do voice or performance acting for video games, called for a strike Friday, citing lack of progress in renegotiating a contract that expired last November. The union said Friday that its board has unanimously agreed to ask its members to vote for a strike by September the 25th, so it's not actually definitely happening just yet. The union is calling for a retroactive 11% wage increase, on-set medics for hazardous performance capture, and protection against the use of generative AI to replace working actors. While actors who contribute to video games seldom appear as themselves on camera in a game, they regularly lend their voices to game characters. Many also have their facial and body movements captured to animate the roles they portray. Actors have been sounding alarms about the potential for generative AI to clone their voices and speak lines for them without them getting paid.
Do we have to remind everyone that Troy Baker literally said that it was all right?
Yeah, he did do that, yeah. Once again, we are facing employer greed and disrespect, SAG-AFTRA President Fran Drescher said in a statement announcing the strike vote. Once again, artificial intelligence is putting our members in jeopardy of reducing their opportunity to work. We all want a fair contract that reflects the important contributions of SAG-AFTRA represented performers in an industry that delivers world-class entertainment to billions of players around the world, Audrey Cooling, a rep for the games industry and producers negotiating the agreement, told Axios. We are negotiating in good faith and hope to reach a mutually beneficial deal as soon as possible. The two game companies who are negotiating with the actors include Activision, EA. The game companies who are negotiating with the actors include Activision, EA, Disney, Take-Two Interactive, Warner Brother Games, and Insomniac. And then it goes on to say that the strikes are happening in TV and film at the moment. Sorry for absolutely murdering that. I could not read for the life of me.
That's okay.
What do you guys make of this then?
Team Strike.
Absolutely.
I think they should go on strike.
Support workers.
Everyone deserves a fair deal. Yeah. I just didn't expect it to be worded, I am Team Strike. But
I am.
Hey, we're all Team Strike.
Team unions here.
Yeah, we're not in a union.
No.
But there isn't really a union for what we do, unfortunately. It would just be us three.
We're voting to go on strike for a week. We want the week off.
But also, we're management, so I don't think we can be in it.
So just be me.
It would just be you.
Unionize with yourself.
Yeah.
What do you want, Ashton? I want more biscuits, please.
I want more biscuits, and I want people to respect the biscuits. Go in the biscuit tin.
Unfortunately, that's impossible. So Ashton is going to strike for 11 months without pay.
Everyone deserves a fair deal. I'm surprised that it's not standard that there are medics on hand for
stunts
and stuff. Yeah. Also, that article, I mean, it's not wrong where it says. People sort of seldom play their own face and likeness in video games, but it does happen more and more now. Mm-hmm. So that's happening more and more, and you can just imagine that we're probably not quite at that stage yet, but in a few years' time, someone might make you could get flipping Cal Kestis. They could just use his face, the likeness of the actor. I mean, I guess also there's a degree of like. Whether you sign that away or not in a contract, because people's likenesses are used in video games sometimes when it's not played by that person. But particularly with AI on the increase, you know, you could do the same with voices, which is a bit more problematic when it is your livelihood as a voice actor. So definitely, I think this is a good idea. I'm pro the TV and film and writers strikes happening as well, given that like they're not getting proper residuals from streaming. Actors who would be earning some of their money from ticket sales from the cinema. When films are going straight onto streaming services now, they're just not getting some of the money that they used to get. So all of these things, I think, need to be looked at with AI on the increase and stuff. And unfortunately, you've got people like Disney and all the big wigs at the top just being quite rude about it, really, just publicly, not even trying to like put on a PR face and say, well, let's all try and work out. No, just getting really aggressive and like impatient with all.
What was it that they cut down all the trees outside had no shade outside? Yeah. The strikers had no shade.
Yeah. And that was actually illegal because those trees didn't belong to. I think it was Warner Bros. That did it.
They just, outside the Warner Bros. Lot where people were striking, if you're unfamiliar with this, they trimmed all the trees right back where the striking actors and performers were seeking shade while they were
worn a lot. I mean, what are the Animaniacs going to do now? That's where they hang
scabs.
Out. Yeah.
Scabs.
Yeah.
Scabs.
They're still in that water tower, just getting paid big money by the people at the top.
Like I say, I'm pro-union, and I am supporting of everyone who's currently on strike. I think they deserve to be treated fairly and correctly, as they have done in the past. And it is scary, the rise of AI, given how much they can do and how much is able to do with people's faces. There was an article a little while ago that said all of the background actors and extras for WandaVision, when they recorded that TV show, their likenesses were all completely scanned in and can now be used in any Marvel product going forward. So they wouldn't even get any more work because they're like, well, we've already got you on file. And that's even kind of, I guess, worse for people who do mocap with their like actual faces, because you've got them completely scanned in doing a variety of reactions and responses. You wouldn't even need to get them back in again because you've already got them on file with you. So I do think that it is a good thing. And I think that the voice actors should go on strike, because I think if they go on strike and they are given a fair deal by these game studios, that would encourage all of those overworked developers and other members of staff that work for these game studios to also go on strike and get their fair pay. But I think that because of that, the game studios will either try to settle before they go on strike or will be reluctant to settle after they go on strike, because that means that there would be more of a precedent within the games industry to go on strike and get what you are owed. So I think that it will be interesting to see if these games companies agree ahead of time, because I think that would be interesting to see the knock-on effect of this. And I do think that devs and other members of the team, they are overworked and underpaid, famously. So I think if this happens, maybe we'll see a shift in the games industry, and maybe it will delay a few of our favourite games. But hey, as long as people are being treated fairly and paid a fair wage, I'm all right waiting an extra 6 to 12 months for a game.
Maybe Rockstar will have to charge $200 for GTA 6.
They can try their best.
Pay their staff fairly.
Yeah.
I have not been following the TV and movie strikes too closely, but from what I have heard, it's basically been a mocking response from those in a position of power who are not taking it seriously. Whereas I know this is going to, you know, this is just the very start, and they've got to put out a PR-friendly statement or whatever. But it certainly seems that the negotiating parties on behalf of the game producers are at least open to talking and trying to come up with something, rather than, you know, rather than cutting down trees and putting out mocking statements and just being really disrespectful. AI, obviously, we've talked about quite extensively on this podcast, and that is of great concern, understandably, to people who make a living by doing that sort of thing. Companies will always be looking to take shortcuts. And of course, there will be smaller developers who can't necessarily afford to bring in big talent or whatever, but there are people of all experiences who can fill those roles and almost any budget. You know, a lot of people who are looking to get their start or who just want to be in a game will probably do it for free. I'm not saying that they should, but the point is, if there is a solution for using AI to generate voices for your game, you should probably take that, because it's just going to reflect poorly on you, even if you do not have the budget to do it. There's always a solution, and these bigger companies who have billions of dollars have no excuse, because it is literally, it's not even a money saving effort, it's just how much more money can we get, which is a story we hear more and more these days in all facets of life. What I'd be interested in, though, is if the strike does happen, how it will actually play out in terms of game development, because unlike TV and movies, which actors are integral to at every stage apart from post-production and writing,
well, even with like pickups in post-production and, you know, like reshoots and things, they're kind of part
they're needed all the way through, whereas in video games, while actors are obviously really important to most video games, the vast majority of video game production isn't recording the actors, it's making the game. So while there will be some delays, I don't know if it will be quite as damaging as as it would be in TV and film?
I think it will depend on, like, we might see a shift in the kind of games we're getting. I think we maybe get less mocap games because they wouldn't be able to do that. And I think that we'd maybe see a shift in the accents of the voice actors, because this is the American Guild, which means that any British or European actors are not technically part of this strike. And I mean, if they do jobs that were initially intended for these American voice actors, they will be scabs. But if the games company just says, oh, well, actually, we're just, we always record in England. So we're actually just going to hire English actors for this role because we always intended these characters to be English. And you've got no proof otherwise. So we may see a shift in...
I admittedly don't really know how it works when it comes to that. It's, like, how are you meant to track it
through?
So, yeah, there's sometimes a solidarity, but there's, like, things like, so the Game of Thrones, A House of Dragons, that's still shooting in England because it's an English an English production company, English actors who are not part of SAG-AFTRA because they're not technically an American actor. So it depends, there's like all the rules, and you can get exemptions. So if it's like a so this might be the bigger companies, but if you are a smaller an indie development studio, you could say, can we still hire actors to be in our show? And they'll be like, well, because you are willing to meet our terms, you can, voice actors can go and work with you. So there are certain exemptions, and there will maybe be a shift in, I think, the kind of games we'd get if we were to go on strike for 11 months. I think there would maybe be like a good year where we'd get like a different selection of games. But like you say, things happen later on in the process for most games. So there maybe wouldn't be that effective, but we just might see more delays.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is, although you're right that, you know, it's a smaller part of the development time to have that work done. If there is just an end-to-end, say, 11-month strike, it's sort of irrelevant how much of that 11 months would have been spent with voice actors. Even if it was like only a single day's worth of work, that person is not going to be able to act in any of that 11 months. We're still going to have to wait until the 11 months is up, you know, whether or not they would have been doing one day or 12 weeks of work in that time.
It's very true. If they do strike for a year, that's a year without any games being able to, well, US games where the people who are part of the SAG-AFTRA would be able to be in games, I suppose. But what I meant was that certain games may end up being unaffected. There will be a knock-on effect.
That's already been recorded.
Yeah, stuff that's already been recorded or stuff that's in pre-pro, you know, it's not going to grind the games industry to a halt the same way that it is affecting TV and movie, but there will be an effect.
So maybe we'll get a rise in silent protagonists.
Maybe.
We'll finally get what we want. Less talking protagonists.
Yeah, could be. Just like Starfield.
Yeah.
Who knows? But yeah, absolutely. All the power to them if they decide to strike or vote to strike. Mm-hmm. And the AI stuff, I think, not being a part of that job pool, the AI stuff would be the thing I'm most worried about.
Yeah.
For sure. So hopefully, if a precedent can be set where AI is basically banned from generating these people's faces in perpetuity or using their voice and generating voice lines from them, then that will be a huge victory and a landmark victory that may actually have an effect on the existing TV and film strikes, because they're worried about similar things, aren't they?
Well, it'd be the same, you know, if someone took our voices and were like, they sacked us, and they're like, we don't actually need you to record any voiceless game, we're just going to use your voice because you recorded enough of a variety of stuff, we just don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
It's no different than, you know, that could happen to any YouTuber, and it has happened previously, so don't do that. Don't like it. No thanks.
Yeah.
Keep your AI out of our business, thanks.
It's very impressive. But let's use it the right way, please.
Yeah.
Not to deprive people of work. So
there
we are. Of course, you can let us know what you thought about all the things we discussed today. My brain is just not... I tell you what
You need some caffeinated noodles.
I need my caffeinated noodles. And it was because I stayed up until midnight
on
Tuesday. Yes. And now I'm sleepy and it's a day later.
Imagine
and I'm still sleepy.
Stayed up till 3 a.m.
I wouldn't
Playing
be here.
The game,
I'd be
sick.
You'd be dead.
I would be sick and dying. Make sure you let us know what you think of all the things we've discussed today in the comments below and in the various other places around the internet where you can find us just live.
Just like youtube.com and twitch.tv/teamtriplejump. All of our videos go out on YouTube and almost all of our streams go out on Twitch, apart from on special occasions. But mostly we're on Twitch, so go over there to look at those.
Brilliant.
If you want to go to our Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, or Instagram, we're Team Triple Jump on all of those. And if you want to join our Patreon, so catch up on the new main menu or any of the VODs without any interruptions from SMTJ, why not go to patreon.com/Team Triple Jump?
Yes, triplej.map is our website. That's where you can find links to everything that we do. And why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. Make sure you go to triplejumpshop.com, take advantage of that sale, and get this shirt pre-ordered before it's gone forever. It's never been a more exciting time to be a gamer.
Never,
everybody.
Ever.
Never, ever been a more exciting time. And go watch the VOD for SMTJ Live now on our VODs channel. Mm-hmm. Right. Just enough time, Ashton, to talk about this week's sponsor.
In memory of Steve Harwell, the lead singer of Smash Mouth, Starfield have changed the name of their game for 24 hours and they're calling it All Star Mouth. I mean, All Star Field.
All Star Mouth.
All Star Field. Jeez, I need some caffeinated Smash noodles. Field. No, you don't.
It'll make you very poorly.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching, everybody, / listening. See you next time.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.